WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Happy New Year to everyone out there celebrating. I am bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back home, and I would say home because it was Highland Town at one point. If it's going to be White Marsh, Chino, Coney Island Hot Dog, my buddy Andy, we're going to begin on the 14th for this year. I'll have some Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. Have a handful of holiday cash drops left, a handful of Raven scratch-offs as well. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I even got my little cap for the rainy days here, as well as our friends at Goodwill. I've been wanting to get this guy out for a crab cake, but once you've had the congressional crab cakes, from what I understand from most Congress people, including Donna Edwards and other folks, have told me this, that, you know, I need to go back and do that. Tom McMillan joins us, congressman, former NBA player, Board of Regents, all of that stuff, but he's our old friend here. And Tom, I was trying to reach out to folks, like old friends, people that I've had on the show. It's my 32nd year of doing sports radio, 25 years at WNST now. And I'm like, I want to begin the year with some old friends. So happy new year to you. And I really appreciate you taking a little time and coming on with us today.
Well, happy new year to you. And Nestor, it's always great to be with you and your show and talk about all things Maryland, politics, Baltimore, well, you name it.
Well, yeah, we take the club. The last time you were on, it was about lefty. And we did a lot of lefty. We did some 72 Olympics and whatnot. And lefty had a birthday recently as well. The Maryland, the heritage and the lineage of Maryland, as this thing goes on, you're sort of one of the tall ones that represents that everywhere you go. Some people may say, oh, there's congressman, there's NBA player. I saw him player. There's Buffalo Brave. I did a little research on this. You're one of those rare guys. But you're like, you're a Terp. I have Sean Merriman coming on this week. I saw Diggs in the game in that horrible tragedy. I'm thinking, every time I see somebody from Maryland, I'm like, oh, that's Terp.
Well, there's a lot of memories there. You know, my brother played at Maryland too. So he played with Gary Williams. They were teammates in Maryland. And of course, playing for lefty was a great thrill. You were right. On Christmas Day, it was his 91st birthday. We had a big party for him last year. It's still on. You can still pick it up if you go www.lefty90.com. It's got all these speakers. It goes for 2 hours. Coach K, everybody in Lefty's past is on that birthday party. But he sounds great. He's doing well. He watches a lot of sports, but he's still a very big Maryland fan.
So what does Lefty, Charles Lefty Giselle, or Tom McMillan in this case, make of the NIL? I had Feinstein on last month, and I sort of opened it up, and I went to the Cal Ripken basketball event that Kevin attended. Gary was on stage. Jay Wright came down from Villanova, and it really got – I saw these experts in the space sort of describe it as some sort of unintended consequences of the wild, wild west here, right? Like, I don't know what Wooden would make of this, but this is the here and now, and the world has changed so dramatically for all the coaches, for all the schools right now, including all those hundreds of schools you have behind you, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we represent those 131 schools of the FBS, including Maryland and Navy, who are part of our association. But the NIL, you know, for kids to be able to sell their publicity rights, I mean, that's sort of an inherent right, and it makes a lot of sense, and I think all of our schools are fully supportive of that. And 95% of the deals that are being done out there are really just solid deals. They're a kid making money in a endorsement or a kind of social influencing or something. But it's the 5% that really are kind of excessive, and they're not based upon publicity rights. It's based upon a pure inducement to get a kid to transfer to another school or to be recruited into an institution. And that's the problem. And because it's really going to the highest bidder. I mean, we hear horror stories where, you know, even at Maryland, I knew some of the coaches were telling me they were trying to recruit a basketball player who some school was offering them $500,000. And that has nothing to do with publicity rights. That has purely to do with what does it cost to get that kid to come to the school.
Well, we knew this, right? I mean, this the bag man, and that's been going on since your era, right?
Absolutely.
And if Lefty could have gotten into a battle with Moses Malone and you going to UCLA, I mean, wouldn't everybody was recruiting at that point. And for a guy like you with a science background and the kind of life you were going to lead, the education part was huge. But I don't know where that sits in 2023 and what I'm trying to figure out what it means for Towson and for Coppin and for smaller schools,
Yep.
in addition to Mr. Big and quarterback at Alabama. And like those people tend to do well in general. And I've always thought that the dirtiest day of the year for me was the first day of March Madness, where everybody's making money as we sit there and watch all these basketball games get played that weekend, except the kids. I mean, everybody, the peanut vendor, everybody's making money. I just don't know. I think we've been talking all of our life what's the right way to do this. And but you always knew there's going to be a fringe of the portal. I mean, that was the one thing I took out of the Cal Ripken, the portal. Everyone's afraid of the portal. We don't understand the portal. And I'm trying to understand the portal as a journalist, but it's made me less interested in college sports to some degree, much less so than in your era when I had the Toyota ACC guide and there were eight teams and it was basketball season and I knew Spinarkle was going to be there for you. You know, I knew all of that. That's all that's so old manish. I can't get my arms around that.
It's really an interesting point because I think that the future of college sports is going to require a new kind of what I call social contract, particularly with basketball and football players, the athletes who are producing a lot of revenue. And this all started because we had a $1 million coach back in 1995. I was in Congress and we were approaching a $1 million coach. And I said, well, in a hearing, I said, if we allow a $1 million coach occurs, there'll be a $1 million player. Well, it's taken 30 years, but we have $1 million players right now. And so, I mean, that's the natural consequence of one side making a lot of money and the other side not having that opportunity. And so I think what's going to have to happen is they're going to have some social contract with basketball and football players. And it's going to require some creativity. And Congress may very well have to solidify that, because if you turn them into pure employees on a university, now you've taken a situation where a player can get fired for missing a basket, or a player can get fired for missing a field goal. And I don't really think that that's what college sports is about. I mean, you know, when a kid comes to an institution, they're supposed to get an education. And the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of criticism of college sports, but 500,000 kids go into this system every year, many from disadvantaged backgrounds. And they come out better for the most part. They come out better. And that's a pretty remarkable system when you look at it. And I don't think there's anything close to it. Maybe the GI Bill would be up there as an equivalent. But these kids are getting an opportunity. They're tutored. They're given all kinds of life skills. And this is what college sports is about. And so if you change that dynamic about giving a kid an education, I think you're changing the whole fundamental precept of college sports. And that doesn't mean you can't share resources with these kids. It just means you don't want to make them employees. So one of the ways they can do it is maybe through a licensing arrangement. Maybe you give a kid a piece of the TV revenues or something, but you do something to share the pie with basketball and football players without turning them into employees. And that's going to require, you know, we have a new NCAA president who's currently the governor of Massachusetts, who was a former student athlete himself. So it's not going to be an easy task to accomplish this.
How's this going to change the NCAA? I mean, it's been this overlord body, I guess, until O'Bannon came along, kind of, right, that sort of shook this thing up. There's been so much oversight on all of this, and you put your congressman hat on for me, Congressman. You say this might wind up in Washington at some point. What's going to make that explode and make that happen? And I wonder that for all sports. I wonder that for Dan Snyder and for the shenanigans. I mean, the Ravens have thrown me out as a journalist after 26 years, right? So, like, I don't know at what point it gets to Congress, right? I often wonder that with antitrust with baseball for all these years as well. But what would run this up the hill, so to speak?
Well, the difference between the Ravens and the Commanders and all that is that we're talking about higher education. We're talking about universities. These are our most important assets in this country. It's the cutting edge of our competitiveness. And we have to be careful, not let the tail wag the dog here. And that's really one of the concerns. I mean, sports are an important part of the marketing of a university, but they always have to be kept in balance. And part of the problem that's gotten really out of control is that, again, the coaches' salaries and the buyouts. There's 500 some million dollars of buyouts who coaches are no longer coaching. They've been fired. That's the best gig you can get. I mean, it's
Well,
better
they are the
than
highest paid person in their state in 20 or 30 of
many
these
times.
states, right?
But I'm just
Literally.
saying, you get fired. Even Maryland's got coaches that are still on the payroll that aren't coaching anymore. And I mean, that's really what's crazy in my book is that a lot of kids should begin. We ought to be doing more opportunities for kids. The secret sauce of college sports is the fact that there are swimmers, there's track and field, there's all these sports. They're life-changing experiences for kids. It's just not always about basketball and football. And so we have to kind of, take those lens off and really look at it in a broader view, what's good about college sports. But it's a challenge because it's always been a battle between education and commercialism. And commercialism is winning. You asked me, what is going to drive this to Congress? I think the biggest problem in college sports in the future will be sports betting. And sports betting is a worldwide industry, $200 billion. It's here to stay. But you have colleges embracing this now. And if something goes wrong, which it invariably does, look at all the legal markets across the world. There's scandals in Germany and in Pakistan, all these legal sports betting markets that have scandals. If you have a scandal across several universities related to sports betting, you bet there's going to be a backlash. And I wouldn't want to be president of a university if that happened on my campus. And it's probably inevitable. It's just a question of when this will happen. And I think that will recalibrate this whole thing because people are going to say, are we going to be the only country in the world that has sports betting on college campuses? In other words, you can't bet on a college sports event anywhere in the world, maybe at Oxford in the crew race in the Thames in the middle of June, but no other university has this kind of prevalence of gambling. And I think that's going to be problematic in the future.
Tom McMillan is here, the former congressman and forever a Terp. So much to talk about with you, and you take me into these lanes with gambling and stuff. I think about the NFL every week. I think to myself, Tom, why don't you and me get together in an alley? We'll put a game on. We'll sanction the game. We're going to own the game. We're going to own the dice. We're going to own all the officiating around it. We're going to decide who wins, which is different than black or red in a casino or which card turns over. We're going to officiate it. We're going to sanction it. And then we're going to own DraftKings and BetKings and SportKings. And we're going to put it on your phone. Like, this things move quickly in regard to the NFL specifically, because that's where all the money is. I mean, I'm
Absolutely.
lottery sponsored. I like casinos. I've been going to Vegas forever. I've never been a gambler. I mean, the Ravens were going to throw me out. If Kevin Berman's going to throw me out of the locker room, it would have been for being in the corner saying to Vinny Testaverde, "Hey, you playing this week, dude?" Like, I can't imagine the scandal for my career having done that. And now I'm thinking, like, you go to the Super Bowl now, it's not Radio Row anymore. It's not radio station, not even podcast. It's a gambling hub. It's a tout system, and it's changed. Like, blink, the plague, it's over with. Here we go. I worry more about the NFL than I do any of this. And you mentioned the college campuses, and that's your background. But I'm thinking, oh my, they're worried about Calvin Ridley betting a couple of bucks on a mobile app. They've got players involved and officials and a of money moving quickly on one play, one field goal. It's frightening to me how quickly this has happened.
Well, and you're bombarded by eight ads every day. The fastest, you look at the advertising growth in FanDuel and DraftKings and all that. It's just incredible. You can't evade it. But here's the difference. The pros are grown-ups. They can handle, listen, they're going to have all the compliance programs. They're going to spend whatever money it takes to keep it pure and clean. Our colleges are a little different because they don't have those resources to monitor these kids. And remember something, when you're on a college campus as a football player, you're walking around. I used to walk around when I had a sprained ankle. Everybody in in my class knew I had a sprained ankle. Those are the kinds of things that happen on college campuses that don't have happen in the NFL. And so you have a much more open environment on college campuses. And that's very – we'll see if I'm wrong, but I believe it's just – and there's an inevitability to a college sports betting scandal. And that would be that will be very, very tragic, and it will result in the kind of backlash and possible congressional action I talked about.
Tom, you got all those hats behind you out on the video. If anybody's not watching, you can find us out on YouTube or anywhere a video is served. We do our podcast, the video these days. Tell me about your role. And I've gotten to know a lot of athletic directors over the years. Steve Eisengrat's going through what he's going through over here at Towson right now and hiring and a new football coach and with a little Colts heritage. And I had Pete on the show 2 weeks ago as well up here. But for all of the other places or all of the schools and that have helmets, I mean, I remember the angst about ACC and Big Ten, and every Terp fan will feel that until we're in the grave, I guess. We belong there, and it just feels like all of it's drifting in a different way to, you know, relegated and not relegated to lack for lack of a, you know, rich or the rest of everyone else. And I think it was always sort of that way, even within the conferences, but it feels like we're about to have a real divide between we do this for money and we do this for education.
You say that, and then you watch Tulane win a game, an unbelievable game yesterday against USC. I mean, Tulane has nowhere near the resources. And so that is really the greatness of college sports, is that any one of those schools behind me can win at any time. And, you know, in fairness, over time, the richer have won the most. I mean, clearly that's the case, but there always are Cinderella cases. Behind me are 131 hats of the FBS, the Football Bowl Subdivision, and I'm the CEO of a group that represents all those schools. And we work on all the issues of college sports, whether it's NIL or transfers or sports betting or any of the myriad of issues. We push the NCAA on some of those issues. We give them new ideas. And we work with our schools to try to accomplish that.
Well, I tell you, through all of this, the Terps sit in the center of this. It is basketball season. I'm not going to lie, Tom. I reached to you before the holidays when the Terps were winning lots of games and things were, you know, smelling great. But this is – it's not that easy. I mean, the Big Ten's not easy. Transition's not easy. And for the program and what it's been through the last couple of years, really since Gary left, and we could talk about Mark and his exit last year and all that the program's been through. But it does feel like there's – with change, there's new hope. And I guess that's for every one of you that want to see them cut down nets and win a championship and go back to all of that and see Lefty happy and Gary happy and you happy. But part of this is there was a change and there was a search. And I think most of the people in the Terps world that I know feel good about what's going on down at College Park right now in the early going, despite what happened against Michigan.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty tough night. And you know, I can always say in my career, I can't think of too many games where we really got clobbered like that. It happens to every team. But Kevin Willard's a sound coach. I think he's had a great track record at Seton Hall. And I think Maryland, I mean, sometimes these are good wake-up calls. I mean, here's the real question. When you go through this kind of string of Wisconsin, Tennessee, UCLA, Michigan, are you going to be able to turn it around? Your next game, I think, is Rutgers, and then they got to play. You know, they got to play this whole Big Ten schedule: Ohio State, Purdue, and will they get together? And it's really the test of all those players whether they can really double down, go back to the basics. This is when you start questioning yourself. You know, can I play basketball? Am I any good? And you get slaughtered like that. Even coaches question themselves, and this is where you have to double down and say, look. We're just going to go out there and practice hard. We're going to take more shots. We're going to, you know, study our opponents more. And that's how you turn it around. And you got to turn it around kind of step by step. And you know, the next game, Rutgers, they've got to come out and really be really eager to play. You know, that's kind of how they opened the season. I thought they had lots of enthusiasm. And then things sort of broke down. And you have to realize they don't really have any – tall players, big, real legitimate big men. So that's it makes it difficult against some of these schools that do, but I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be okay.
From a hope standpoint, in portals and NILs and Under Armour and like all of that, these things do turn around quickly. I mean,
They do.
I know everybody was waiting for Turgeon to be a magician to some degree, but there were a lot of good players and a lot of Sweet 16s and a lot of hope and a lot of energy always around this program as it relates to the Big Ten since Maryland's been in it, quite frankly. And other than Michigan State trying to develop whatever dominance it would be for basketball within the conference, I sense new life. And I think for guys like you that are even a little older than me, Maryland basketball, much like being a Steelers fan or a Ravens fan, they don't make a lot of changes. There's not a whole lot of meet the new coach that's gone on in College Park, even for you 50 years into this, that it always feels like it is more of a longer term. This isn't a 2 year or 3 year thing. This is about trying to build something over the next decade and giving Kevin a chance, giving the new university a chance, the new system a chance. So many things about this are new. The old championship hat's still sitting up there and Gary Williams' name on the court. We could talk about Lefty, but I think this is about the future and where Maryland will fit in for this. And I think for me, whatever Michigan, however even how this year goes, to me, I'm much more long play with this because I think the university has always been more long play.
Well, here's the difference. I mean, I would say that that was probably a traditional view, but with the transfer portal, the ability to move schools, you have agents out there right now that are trying to convince kids to move away from a school to another school. And so, conversely, if you're a coach, you've got to be able to go in the transfer portal and bring kids to your school. You don't have 3 years to build a program like you normally had to do by recruiting, subsequent classes over 3 years. That's how you'd build a team. Today, you can build a team overnight. Look at USC was built football overnight. And so that's the pressure that I think's on Kevin Willard. It's so different because he has to go into the transfer portal. He has to show progress this year, go into the transfer portal, and win next year because that's the expectation these days. You don't have 2 or 3 years anymore. And so that's the only counter to the point you made is that the pressures are so immediate today.
Well, for me, if there's still kids out there that want to go to a school and decide when they're 14 that that's the color they want to wear and where they want to be, it would feel to me like if that were the case in whatever school, whatever state that you grew up in, or if you even if you grew up in Maryland and wanted to play for Duke, like Wojo or whatever your thought is on doing that, that th there would be money to support that if you're good enough to do it. If that. Kids that are local, Maryland will find a way to keep the Len Bias type players local, right? Or am I
I think
wrong and
so.
say that that's the way it'll shake out eventually?
Three of the Michigan players were DMV players. Part of the success to making Maryland basketball great is you got to get the best players in the DMV in this market. You can't let lose them, and you got to get these kids to come to Maryland. And you look at Michigan, a good portion of their team was made up of players from this market. And so, and the other thing that's tough for Maryland, it's going to be a challenge, is there are so many schools that have so much money. I heard the other day from a school in the South that the donors didn't want to give to these collectives, these third-party organizations that collect money for student athletes, because they'd just rather give it to the kids. The NCAA is really not enforcing this. And so we're back to the old world of just giving money under the table. It's so ironic. And it's going to be a real challenge to get that back in order. But there is so much money out there flowing for kids. We've heard stories that some kids on teams have every one of them's getting a brand new Porsche, nice cars. And so Maryland is it's really it's a challenge whether Maryland can compete in a marketplace which is going to be based on the richest will get richer. And that's really unfortunate. And it's going to be a challenge for college sports to get that back under control. There was always the fact that money was the force that led to greater wins in many cases and greater players. But you always had sort of this competitive balance, and that's really what makes college sports great. By the way, The NFL is marvelous at doing that through revenue sharing, through all the things they do. The weakest, they realize that they're only as good as their weakest franchise. That's not the case in college sports right now. And so we'll have to see how all that works out.
Congressman Tom McMillan is our guest. We waited to have him on here. We waited so long the Terps went into a slump, but this is going to fix things and change things. I hope to see you down at College Park, and you're still attending, going to games, still hanging out locally, making your way over
there?
I
do, yeah. I go to a lot of schools. I'm actually heading to California today to go to the college football playoff. So I have to, I have to go to a lot of the different sports events.
Well, you mentioned all those hats behind you. The fact that TCU is in the college championship, and it took my wife until the fourth quarter. I said to her, "Do you know their nickname?" She's like, "No," and I'm like, "Horned Frogs," and I'm like, "You're not going to believe me." Like when I tell you that that's their name, if you've never heard that, so I mean, that's how sort of obscure. And I guess that's great for college football. That's great for college.
It really is, and it's a great institution. I've been there, and it's a beautiful campus and facilities, and it was built off of a lot of oil money down there in Texas. So it's a very rich school and rich traditions, and it's quite remarkable. I mean, they could win this whole thing. They've had just a Cinderella season. So.
Well, I hope you have a good time out in Inglewood. Enjoy yourself out in California. Always great to visit with you, and I hope to rub elbows with you when I see you down at College Park. But thanks for coming on. Always great.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Happy New Year. Thank
Appreciate
you.
That. Congressman Tom McMillan has been coming on the program for all of 30 years, even back when he was a congressman back in the day. And, of course, you can find him in and around College Park. You can find me doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog, and that's going to be in White Marsh next Thursday. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation and Goodwill as we begin a new year the right way. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.